The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. I wanted to talk today about the mind and heart of transferring merit. You know, we just had our transfer of merit ceremony. Maybe this will be of some help. For me, the mind and heart from which I transfer merit is synonymous with the mind and heart with which I meditate. Okay. In meditation, there's this place of acceptance and inclusiveness of all myriad things that make up our lives. And also, when we're meditating formally, we do not try and figure it all out. So I think when we offer merit, it isn't a question of figuring it all out. We offer merit. We offer that to all beings. In meditation, as you know, we are just with our thoughts and with the myriad things of our life. That is, we thoughts and things arise, abide, and pass away. And if you're like me, sometimes they arise, abide, and pass away like a broken record over and over again. That's okay. That doesn't faze me. The important thing is coming back to that present moment. So in formal meditation, as you know, we practice no deliberate thought. That's the important thing. It's not a time when you sit down and meditate where you're focusing on a deliberate thought. You can do that at other times. That's absolutely fine. Just not in formal meditation, the way that we practice it. Today we've offered merit for specific beings and situations, and yet our offering of merit is a very open prayer. It's kind of wide open prayer for all beings, that they will all come to a place of peace, non-suffering, and contentment. The mind and the heart that offers this wish that beings be free from suffering is an expression of how vast and compassionate Buddha nature actually is. I think you can also draw an analogy between transferring merit and developing loving kindness. Okay? They both take us in the same direction. A little bit, maybe different practice, but they both take us in the same direction. They're both selfless acts. Okay? I would also say, I think that meditation is a selfless act because we're not trying to create a self in meditation. We're just seeing what's there. Asking for a transfer of merit for oneself is possible. You know, we don't necessarily, I think we have this thing that, you know, everyone needs merit. Actually, we know we need merit, but we don't want to put write our name down there because maybe somebody will recognize our handwriting and think that that's a little funny. But in actual fact, we all need merit. So why can't merit be offered for us? Okay. Right. And as you know, with loving kindness, you start with yourself, and then it radiates out from there. So these things acknowledge that at times we could use help, sympathy, warm thoughts. So I'm talking about all beings, but I'm also talking about ourselves here because we are part of all beings. Because again, we have this way of kind of thinking all beings out there. But every time we say all beings, we actually are including ourselves in all beings. And there's the basic ones that must save ourselves, or when we talk in the Bodhisattva vows about saving all beings, we're actually talking about ourselves. We're definitely not discluding ourselves. Okay, and all beings, including us, need and deserve love. Okay. It doesn't seem to work so well if we hate ourselves and love others, or we love ourselves and hate others. It's actually essential that we love ourselves and love others. Even if we don't like them, even if we don't like ourselves, because sometimes we don't. Even if we find them difficult, and I think all of us find ourselves very difficult at times, or even if they have harmed us, okay, still we radiate loving kindness out to all these beings, and we offer merit for them. Okay, I want to kind of stop on the word love a bit, because it feels after a while that it's just becoming another four-letter word, which it's much more than. But the important thing is to bring the Buddha's teachings into our daily practice and life. That's what these different ceremonies or expressions are trying to help us with. And I'll just quote, I think it's the name of the song, but it was definitely in the song, if many of you who, of us older generation remember Taj Mahal, and he had this song, "Happy to Be Just Who I Am." Really good song. Really, really good Buddhism. If you can't be happy to be just who you are, you got to work on it, because that's essential. Because that's how we come to peace, we find contentment, and it's really how we can save ourselves and others when we're at this place. Then I'd like to read a couple pieces, one's from a Chan master and one's from a Japanese Zen master. Because to me, they are talking about the mind from which, the heart from which we transfer merit. And they just do it in a little bit different way. And they're also talking about the mind and heart of meditation. So the first piece I want to read is from is by Venerable Master Weinang from the Platform Sutra. And I'm going to use Red Pine's translation. Okay. And if you haven't read the Platform Sutra, Weinang over and over again addresses everyone as good friends. So I'll use his salutation. "Good friends, now that you have finished taking refuge in the three treasures, each of you should clear your mind, and I will convey to you the teaching of Mahaprajnaparamita. Good friends," he likes this expression, good friends, he uses it over and over again. "Good friends, you may have chanted this without understanding it, but if you listen, I will explain it. Mahaprajnaparamita is Sanskrit. In our language, it means the great wisdom that leads to the other shore. This teaching must be practiced and not simply chanted with your mouth. If you chant it with your mouth but don't practice it, it's like an illusion or a mirage. But the Dharma body of those who practice it is the same as a Buddha's. What does Maha mean? Maha means great. The capacity of the mind is so great, it's like space. But if you practice empty-minded Zen, you will fall into a featureless void. In this world of ours, space has no room, in this world of ours, space has room for the sun and the moon and the stars, the earth and its mountains and rivers, every plant and tree, bad people and good people, bad teachings and good teachings, heavens and hells. All of this exists in space. The emptiness of our nature is also like this. Our nature contains the 10,000 dharmas. That's how great it is. And the 10,000 dharmas are our nature. Do you see humans and non-humans, both the good and the bad, good dharmas and bad dharmas, without rejecting them and without being corrupted by them? This is to be like space. This is what is meant by great. This is what maha means. Deluded people chant this with their mouths. The wise practice it with their minds. There are also deluded people who call having an empty mind, there are also deluded people who call having an empty mind and not thinking great, but that isn't how this works. The capacity of the mind is great, but if you don't use it, it's small. If you merely talk about emptiness with your mouth, but you don't practice this practice, you're no disciple of mine. So he's pretty direct with his friends. I've read the Platform Sutra numerous times, and I'm always struck by this little piece. And that's just his description, really, of the word maha. Okay, he goes on to talk about prajnaparamita. When he's talking about the mind, I think actually it's the same character as in my name, the Shin character. I think he's talking about the heart mind. So he's talking about the vastness of the heart mind, which is what all beings, all things have. Okay? We've got it. He talks about empty-minded Zen. I think he uses this expression a number of times in the sutra, if I remember correctly. When he talks about meditation, it isn't like meditation is this all clear state, you know, where there's no thought, nothing arises. You just kind of roll along, you know, you sit down and you're just in this place. And I think maybe some people experience that some of the time, maybe some people more of the time. But I think we want to not mistake that for the whole thing. That's just what's happening at that moment in time. And actually, the meditation, if done properly, if done from the place of no deliberate thought, if done from the place of returning, it's not empty. Okay? It's not empty-minded Zen. Okay. Physically, I think we know that space is not a void. It's got its black holes, but it's got its stuff. And it's really broad, infinite. You know, we're constantly finding new aspects to space. We can't contain it. And this is the comparison that he is using for our heart-mind. Okay? So that's quite a compliment to human beings, that they have a heart-mind that's as vast as space. I find that really encouraging. Okay? And again, in speaking of this space and equating it to emptiness, it's not like an emptiness where there's nothing there. It's actually an emptiness where the bottom fell out. And you just could go forever. It's this incredible space that we as human beings can be in. Okay? And I think that we can be in it in our ordinary way of being, because it's not something special. It's just actually how we are. Okay, he says that our nature contains the 10,000 dharmas. That's a lot of dharmas. Actually, he uses dharmas with the little d, which can refer to just things. But I think it also refers to dharmas. So again, there's this reference to the vastness of our minds, the vastness of our hearts. And in fact, he says that 10,000 dharmas are our nature. Okay? And it's not only that our nature contains this, but actually our nature is this. I find that encouraging. And he also says, without rejecting them and without being corrupted by them. Well, that sounds a lot to me like holding on neither holding on nor pushing away. And the fact that we have to discern, it's not empty-minded. Excuse me. It is losing the voice. It is not empty-minded Zen. We have to discern to live. We have to make decisions. We have to be responsible. We just don't float about. Reverend Master G.U. Kennett used to say that to be able to hold the all is one and the all is different simultaneously is to be enlightened. So I think this idea of the mind and the analogy to space, it isn't just about the all is one. There's all these myriad different things in that space. And they can be there, and you can move through the space. So this heart mind that is like space, it discerns, but it doesn't judge. Because judgment is something that catches us up. At least it has in my life. It kind of comes hard down on something as though maybe we know everything. You know, it's boom. You know, judgment can be a reaction. Discernment can be a movement within the causes and conditions in our life. So with the discernment, we don't follow bad dharmas, bad teachings, bad people. Obviously, we have to be careful of the word bad here. It's getting like the word love. Unskillful people, unprudent teachings, incorrect dharmas. Okay. What the heart mind does is it follows the precepts. It's said in our tradition that meditation and the precepts are one. So it's when I say the precepts here, I mean meditation too. So we follow the precepts. We look. We observe. Because we need to discern. We need to see what is wise, what is good, what does not create suffering for ourselves and others. Okay. And we know the basic teaching of the Buddha that karma is actually a law of the universe. The Buddha didn't make it up. That karma is inexorable. It's unavoidable when you set something in motion. There will be karmic consequences. We also know that it's the owner that is responsible for the karma, for their karma. Okay? It's not vindictive. It's just the way it is. How could it be otherwise? Okay? In our offertory this morning, we say that we pray that the mountain of their karma may vanish. And if I've got this right, and the mind bloom in the springtime of enlightenment. So again, there's that mind, the springtime of enlightenment, that mind that's like space. And there's this very compassionate view towards karma. So the heart mind is this very open thing that transfers merit for the benefit of all living things. Now I'm going to read a second piece here, and I hope this all comes together because they're thoughts. Okay? But they seem in my mind to tie together. And this piece actually goes at it a different way. See, this is one of the beauties we have of all the teachings that we have. They go this way and they go that way, and as Reverend Master G used to say, if you throw enough mud, some will stick. So, and this piece is by Zen Master Menzan Zuiho. So not Manzan, but Menzan. And actually, Menzan, who lived from 1683 to 1769 was studied under Monzon, the Monzon that is in our line. And great master Menzon was thought to be one of the greatest Soto Zen scholars. And he published editions of great master Dogen's writings and wrote commentaries on them. And this particular piece I found in a little book that we were given years ago, I think by the Soto Shu from Japan, called Shikantaza. And Shikantaza is our form of meditation. Okay? It's serene reflection. And this piece is called, I hope my Japanese is reasonable here, Jijuyu Zanmai. Okay, and it translates out as Samadhi of the Self. And this piece has been translated by Shohaku Akamura Roshi, who a number of you have met. He talked here years ago, came and visited us. And he has a temple in Indiana. He's a very fine monk and a fine Buddhist scholar and a great scholar of Dogen. So I'm going to read this. As I say, this goes at it a bit differently. Okay, and he uses the expression emotion thought. I would be real interested to see what the original word was, to see how I would translate that. But emotion thought's okay. So great master Menzon says, originally all things are free from emotional thought and beyond evaluation or differentiation. You must realize this clearly and without doubt. Now, because people are blinded with illusory thoughts, they cannot clearly and thoroughly see the reality of the whole body of all beings. Consequently, they view things as good or evil, being or not being, life or death, sentient being or Buddha. If their eyes were open, however, they could not help but realize that the knowledge or perspective acquired through their personal experience is not the whole of reality. Therefore, no one can be free of delusion until emotional thought has dropped off. No matter how diligently one continues to do good deeds, if these deeds are based on the blinded mind, the results will be only a limited happiness in the world of human or heavenly beings. For such good deeds still belong to the defiled causation in the six worlds of samsara. So I just want to make it clear that I don't think that what is being said here is that you should disregard your intuitions, your experience, or even your own emotions. Okay? What I think it is looking at, and going at this mind that is like space, this heart mind that is like space in a little different way, is the limits if we hold on to emotional thought. I want to say again that there is nothing wrong with emotions. If we were devoid of emotions, we would be practicing empty-headed Zen. That's not what we want to do. It's not about living life unemotionally. But what it is looking at is extreme emotions. I guess it's like extreme sports or something. We've got all these extreme activities nowadays that we make television shows out of. But extreme emotions, and maybe more so the holding on to extreme emotions and how that can cause difficulties in our practice. I would somewhat equate it to being in a tiny boat on a stormy sea and just being knocked around, you know, very, very hard to get established. But I guess if the person is a skillful boater, even in all the stuff, you know, the extreme emotions, they can find the place, the proper place of emotions within that. Well, he says, originally all things are free from emotion, thought. I don't think he's saying that originally we're free from thought. I think what he's saying is originally we are in this place of open space. Okay. And this originally is our own Buddha nature, which great Master Dogen, you know, goes much beyond saying that we just possess it, we are it. But you know how it is. You can dwell in paradise, but feel that there's everything's wrong there. It's kind of how we are. So I think it's important that, essential that we discern, that we sort out. I don't think, well, sometimes, maybe a lot of the time, you really can't let go of something unless you let it arise and you look at it. Because if you don't look at it, you just, you know, it doesn't work that way. So you have to look at it. And depending on what it is, it can take various lengths of time. I think that's good. Because to let it go, we have to look at it. And there is this original place free from emotion, thought. There is this original place of Buddha nature that has never deserted us. No matter what has happened, it has never deserted us. So, I'll just end by saying that the heart mind offers us a deeper refuge. And in fact, this refuge, when we take it, when we go to that place, which we freely can, okay, I find that's the place I can really offer merit to the world from. I can offer merit for all beings, good people, bad people, good dharmas, bad dharmas, good teaching, bad teaching. Okay. Ultimately, we are the ones who can turn and return to this undivided Buddha nature. Again, it never left us, but you know, sometimes circumstances, things are such that it looks pretty bleak and black and difficult. But the Buddha nature is still there. There's this light within the darkness. And that light, that Buddha nature, is as vast as space. And it's as compassionate as Avalokiteshvara. So that's my thoughts. I hope that made some sense and was helpful to you.